WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. UVA medical school faculty and staff want two department heads to resign over allegations of mismanagement and intimidation. Local governments face a decision over working with federal immigration officials. And hunters shooting at doves on power lines cause power outages in Southside, Virginia. This is the WMRA Daily for Monday, September 9th. University of Virginia School of Medicine faculty and UVA health workers are demanding the immediate resignation of the heads of the two organizations. The Daily Progress reports they claim the pair have created a, quote, culture of fear and retaliation that is endangering patients. More than 120 professors and healthcare workers signed a letter of no confidence in UVA Health CEO Dr. Craig Kent and School of Medicine Dean Dr. Melina Kibbe. The letter was delivered to the university's governing board of visitors last week. The letter claims that Kent and Kibbe mismanaged money needed at the clinical level, disregarded policy and ethics, and threatened those who spoke out against them, among other problems. A UVA health spokesman said that the university would investigate the allegations. Virginia is one of nine states being impacted by an outbreak of salmonella, according to health officials. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports the bacteria has been found in eggs distributed from Wisconsin's Milo's Poultry Farms or Tony's Fresh Market. Officials advise consumers to discard the recalled products and visit a healthcare provider if they have fever-like symptoms. At least 65 people nationwide have been infected, 24 of whom were hospitalized. As of Sunday, no deaths have been reported. TV cameras will not be allowed at the trial of the alleged so-called shopping cart killer, but WHSV reports that reporters will be allowed to take still photos. Judge Bruce Albertson ruled in favor of photographers in the courtroom during a hearing last week on the upcoming trial of Anthony Eugene Robinson. Albertson also said that no filming would be allowed in the courtroom during the trial. Robinson, age 36, a native of Washington, D.C., was nicknamed the shopping cart killer by police. He is accused of murdering up to five women across Virginia and D.C., including two in Harrisonburg. Police also allege that he disposed of the bodies with shopping carts. You'll find all our coverage of the case at WMRA.org. Local governments across Virginia are considering whether they want to work with federal immigration officials, Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Republican Attorney General Jason Meares says local law enforcement officials have the authority and a moral duty to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. In a written statement, he thanks sheriffs who are working with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE. He also criticized those who aren't, saying, quote, shame on you. Virginia legal expert Rich Kelsey says Virginia sheriffs should be cooperating with federal immigration officials.
So to the extent that localities aren't doing that, 25, 30 years into this crisis, is a little bit disturbing, and I agree with the Attorney General. Shame on you.
But some advocates worry that people who feel like they're in danger of being deported might stop contacting police when they need help or stop cooperating with investigations.
Local officials shouldn't be doing ICE's job for them.
That's Sophia Gregg, senior immigrants' rights attorney with the ACLU of Virginia.
ICE is a federal agency with countless agents and billions of dollars for enforcement. If ICE wants to arrest a non-citizen here in Virginia, they have every ability to do so. They don't need local officials to do their job for them.
She says sheriffs have the discretion to work with federal immigration authorities to detain people, but she adds they also have the discretion to avoid working with ICE. Michael Pope.
A state pilot program funding more mental health counselors in Virginia's public colleges is continuing for another 2 years. Megan Pauley with VPM News reports.
Since students returned to campus following the COVID-19 pandemic, college counselors have been busier than ever. Brian Lusk is counseling director at Radford University and says that's been both a blessing and a curse.
It's a blessing in that students see the need to reach out and work on their mental health and be proactive as possible. The curse part is we just don't have enough staffing to be able to adequately see students ongoingly.
Luckily, state grant funds are helping address the school's staffing shortage to help meet student demand. Radford was among a handful of universities that received funding for a counselor position in both grant cycles in 2022 and this year. The funding helps students with master's degrees in counseling or social work obtain the supervised clinical hours necessary to gain licensure. Colleges hope the program will expand in the future, as there's been more demand than there is funding.
Megan Pauley reporting. Hunters shooting at doves caused power and internet outages in Buckingham, Cumberland, and Appomattox counties over the weekend. The Farmville Herald reports that hunters' bullets missed doves perching on power lines and hit the lines or casings instead. Shooting at power lines is illegal, and Firefly Fiber Broadband has asked hunters to avoid shooting near them. As of Monday morning, power had been restored. The Chesapeake Bay Foundation says it will use a new federal grant to plant 1 million baby oysters in Hampton, WHRO's Catherine Hafner reports.
This week's grant of nearly $500,000 comes from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. The Bay Foundation says it will allow them to plant 1 million oysters on 2 acres of newly created reefs along the Hampton River that cuts through the city. The nonprofit says the project is meant to serve and involve the surrounding community, including Hampton University. As they grow, the oysters should clean the water, support other marine life, and help boost recreational fishing in the area.
Catherine Hafner reporting. Dominion Energy's plans announced in 2014 to build a massive natural gas pipeline through the Shenandoah Valley sparked a 6-year battle that eventually led all the way to the Supreme Court. Jonathan Mingle's new book, Gaslight, tackles this case, and he is our speaker for Tuesday night's Books and Brews at Pale Fire Brewing in Harrisonburg. WMRE's Chris Boros interviewed Jonathan and asked him to describe the incident.
A decade ago, Dominion Energy and Duke Energy proposed to build a 600-mile-long natural gas pipeline that would stretch from West Virginia through the mountains of Virginia down to the Hampton Roads area and then down to North Carolina. And right away, they ran into some pretty fierce opposition, especially in some rural counties like Highland County, Nelson County, Virginia, Buckingham County, and Augusta County. And those are the places that my book, Gaslight, really focuses on. So the book tells the story of how ordinary folks from all walks of life fought this for 6 long years, you know, upending their lives and careers and retirement plans, until they pulled off something that was pretty unprecedented. They succeeded in getting Dominion to cancel this project after 6 years of tenacious opposition.
How rare is that for a situation like this where communities will fight a huge company and then end up winning? That sounds like that almost never happens.
As far as I can tell, it is unprecedented for a pipeline of this scale. And yeah, I think some of the folks who really dug in early on told me that they couldn't find a single example of successful grassroots opposition defeating a project of this scale backed by such a powerful company.
Did they ever end up building any of the pipeline at all?
They did. So there are a few dozen miles of pipe in the ground in West Virginia, and they felled trees along the route through West Virginia and in a few places in Virginia, but they never put any pipe in the ground in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And so to me is also a telling detail. I think Dominion's leaders ran into a buzzsaw of opposition in these rural counties that they didn't expect to encounter.
So how did Dominion respond when they lost?
You know, up until the very end, Dominion's public relations strategy seemed to be project confidence, insisting that we're going to build this, we're not deterred by the delays and all the losses in federal courts for the project. And up until June of 2020, Dominion's leaders and Duke Energy's leaders kept saying, no, we're going to build this and we're confident that we can overcome these obstacles. And then very suddenly, on a Sunday afternoon in July 2020, they announced they were canceling it. And, you know, for folks who've been fighting it for so long, it was like whiplash, right? Yeah, because the narrative that had been put forward by these companies for years was that if they couldn't build this project, Virginia's economy would suffer. Over time, that narrative just didn't stand up to the scrutiny that grassroots folks applied to it and forced government officials to apply to it. Although in some cases, some of these people I talk to and write about in the book would tell you, you know, in a way it felt like we were doing the regulators' jobs for them. They saw themselves as applying accountability to these powerful corporations that the public, stewards of the public interest at Virginia state agencies or the federal government agencies just weren't doing.
Did Dominion show any sympathy for the communities at all?
Yeah, I think early on in 2014, 2015, Dominion sent staffers out into these counties and tried to mount a charm offensive, but it kind of fell flat. And people felt like Dominion wasn't really listening to their concerns. And people had a hard time negotiating easements with the company or getting them to move the route away from everything from septic tanks to private wells, family graveyards. And it's hard if you want to run a pipeline that's 600 miles long. Not only is it going through National Forest, Blue Ridge Parkway, Appalachian Trail, Shenandoah Valley, under the James River, you know, you have to go through thousands of privately owned parcels and negotiate an easement with each one.
Wow.
And a lot of people I talked with who were on, you know, the receiving end of those negotiating tactics felt like Dominion wasn't all that sympathetic to their concerns. You know, in some cases they would get the route tweaked here and there, but the message that came through to both local county board of supervisors I talked to, but also just ordinary landowners, was this is going to get built and you really can't stop it. So try to get the best deal you can.
That was a sample of our interview with Jonathan Mingle. He is the author of Gaslight, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline and the Fight for America's Energy Future. He's our guest for Books and Brews Tuesday night in Harrisonburg. And later today, during All Things Considered, Chris Boros will have more from this interview. You can hear the full conversation now at WMRA.org. Well, finally today, after an 82-year hiatus, Roanoke College won its first home game as a newly revived football team. The Maroons won 34-27 against Hampton Sydney's junior varsity Tigers on Sunday. This season, the Maroons will only compete on a 5-game schedule. The team plans to participate fully as a Division III team next year in the Old Dominion Athletic Conference. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Monday.